Hey everyone, before we get started, I have some quick news. Next weekend, our very own Shelley Corbett will be hosting a toy photography presentation and workshop at the Bricks Cascade LEGO Convention in Portland, Oregon. I'll be there too to lend a helping hand and do some special podcasting. The presentation is on Saturday, March 24th at 10 a.m. You can purchase your ticket and learn more information at BricksCascade.com. Hope to see you guys there. You're listening to the Toy Photographers Podcast, the official podcast of toyphotographers.com. I'm James Garcia, and on this show, I talk to photographers around the world who are turning Lego, action figures, miniatures, custom creations, and more into amazing works of art. On this week's show, I talk to David Valdez, who you may know by his online moniker, Father's Figures. David is well known for his stunning cinematic shots of action figures. His work even caught the attention of Hasbro and was featured in the New York Toy Fair, San Diego Comic-Con, and Star Wars Celebration. David and I spoke about how he got into photography, his greatest sources of inspiration, and what he has to do on location and in the editing room to bring his awesome photos to life. Let's start with, how did you first get into photography in general, and then we can jump into toys.
Ooh, that goes back. Man, if you want to go way back to the beginning, it definitely started through my dad, because he was into photography and he had cameras, you know, SLRs, old film cameras, of course. And I graduated from high school in 2000, so we're talking like earlier high school, so probably 97, 98-ish, when I took photography classes just kind of for the fun of it. And that's when I really learned all the things about ISO and aperture and developing my own film and developing my own prints even. And it was really fun. I liked it a lot. So that's like where my photography love started, which actually ended shortly after that, because during college, I worked at a couple photo labs, like 1 hour photo kind of places. And just as like a printer, printing photos for people, you know, doing corrections and such.
Mm-hmm.
And that, that really, I don't know if killed my love for photography, but I definitely didn't take many pictures around that time. Some here and there, but not like in an art form, you know, it'd be just like kind of hanging out with friends or what have you.
I get that. Was it just because you were surrounded by photography stuff all day? You didn't want to get into it, or?
It was definitely a combination of things. It was that, and I just didn't have anything to take pictures of. Like my art or my, you know, my kind of creative outlets at that point were definitely more coming out through drawing and just kind of design things and different little ways. Like photography wasn't part of my creative outlet, I guess. I had plenty of others at that point.
So once you started getting into photography a bit more, how did that morph into toys?
Okay, so when I came back, I was in Los Angeles for about 4 years, and I was working in the video industry, and that's kind of where my current career is leading, and working on actual broadcast television stuff now.
Oh, cool.
But when I came back from California, or Los Angeles, I guess, I kind of got into Instagram. I've got a little sister who's 11 years younger, and so she was the right age for all the different social media things. So I kind of do things kind of following her, almost like, oh, that looks like fun, so I'll try Instagram, and started taking pictures with it here and there. And as far as like the toy thing goes, it kind of came at the same time, because when I was in LA, I had just no money. You know, I mean, living out there is so expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I had a couple. I'd buy figures really, really seldomly. So I wasn't like really collecting at that point. So when I got back home, I definitely had more a disposable income, because it's not as expensive to live in Minnesota as it is in Los Angeles, for sure. So it was a combination of kind of getting into Instagram and kind of doing the photo sharing thing, and then getting back into toys around that same time. And the advent, the beginning of my toy photography, for a while, I've told the story that it was when I was drawing a picture of Beast or Hank McCoy, and then I thought it'd be fun to take a picture of the action figure I was using, the old Toy Biz Beast figure, and I posed him like he was drawing the drawing that I just drew. So like he was drawing a massive self-portrait of himself.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
And I kind of thought that was my first step into toy photography, because then, you know, of course I wanted to post it on Instagram and using whatever random photography hashtags I could think of or find. But I recently found there was actually a time earlier when I was taking pictures of my Lego Deadpool, that first set that he came out in, where It was a helicopter, and it was like the Deadpool helicopter with Magneto and Wolverine in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had bought that, and like I was kind of posing him, and I wanted to take pictures of him and post them on Instagram and like tag Rob Liefeld. And, you know, so I really think that that was my first step into toy photography, was trying to make cool pictures like that. And that might have been the same time where I was discovering toy photography on Instagram just through hashtags.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of like looking at other photographers and what they were doing. Because at the time in Instagram, I was really just following comic book artists, which was my big influence then, because I was really into drawing at the point.
It's funny that you kind of started with a Lego picture, because you don't do Lego very often as a subject.
No, that's true. And like, there's so many like toy photographers that are purely Lego. And the thing that's actually sad is I have a ton of Legos. Like, I've been so compulsive about buying Lego sets, and so many of them just sit and I haven't shot them and I haven't done anything with them. And I had a real kind of moment with myself some point last year. I was like, okay, stop buying every Star Wars Lego set. Like, you're not shooting them. You're not doing anything with them. But I love Lego. I mean, I grew up on Lego. Back then when I was a kid, like in the, you know, late 80s or whatever, when I was really doing a lot of Lego building, you're so limited as far as the pieces you had. So you really had to be creative when you're building certain things. And that was a really fun part of it for me.
Why do you think you don't shoot Lego very often? Is it just because you're more interested in the action figure stuff? Or
it probably is because I can get way more with the action figures as far as poses.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like getting some really kind of like emotion or whatever. Because, again, it goes back to my influence kind of comic books and comic book art, where I think a lot of times when I'm posing action figures, it's like I'm thinking in the way that like a cover artist would do for a comic book.
Oh, okay.
Where, you know, you want to have like exaggerated action poses that kind of suck you into whatever story they're telling. And with Lego, you can do that to an extent, but there's much more freedom in regular action figures. So, I mean, that's why I have a lot of respect for Lego photographers, because you're much more limited with what you can do, but so many people get really great things out of them.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot less articulation than something like a, you know, Star Wars Black Series figure or something. That's one thing I love about your photography. You mentioned the way you shoot, and yours are so full of action and emotion and movement, and you've got explosions going on, and it's a really cool style. Once you started first taking those, or getting into toy photography on Instagram and taking that first Lego picture and taking that picture of Beast, when was that? How long ago was that?
Okay, so this must have been somewhere in 2012.
Okay.
I was following more and more people on Instagram. Like, I can go back to my personal account on Instagram and see those original toy photographers I was following. Guys like Moss All The Time. I think he had a different name back then. But AZX Famous, like, he was one of the earliest guys I was following. Guys like, is it Brandon Robinson, maybe? I can't remember who else. But a few of those guys where I was seeing it, and that's when it really occurred to me, like, this is an art form. This isn't so much, I mean, it's fun, but it's not just fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's people making incredible images, great photography, and that really inspired me. And around the same time, the Black Series started. And I grew up on Star Wars toys. I have a ton of vintage stuff. And it was at that point where I really wanted to make my own Star Wars collection, because I really didn't have, I just had, you know, a few of the Saga figures here and there, a few 3 3/4 guys. But when I saw the 6-inch line coming out, I was just struck. Like, I was like, I need to collect these. These are awesome looking figures. And I just decided right then and there, I was like, I'm going to get every one of these Black Series that comes out. And
yeah.
And that was around the same time, too, that I started my father's figures. And I said, you know, this is what I'm going to do now. I'm going to have my own toy photography account. And the Black Series really kicked that off. And some of the stuff NECA was doing at the time, too. I think the first, or maybe one of the very first pictures I did as father's figures, was of that Ed 209 from RoboCop. It was a shot of him and Wally together.
Oh, cool. I saw that, actually. I wanted to see all your pictures. I scrolled through your whole feed and I got to that one at the bottom. Yeah.
And that was one I think that even I carried over from my personal account. There was a couple that I carried over, because when I started, I wanted to have a couple things ready to go. But yeah, that was, it was about that time. And now that was where my creative outlet started coming through. It was like having more ideas about pictures and little funny stories. And yeah, it all came together.
Do you prefer to shoot those Black Series figures still, or do you have another like line that you're super into? You're the first action figure photographer I've had on the show, so I'm really curious about how you pick your subjects and why.
Well, I definitely do Star Wars because Star Wars has always just been my favorite thing. Mm-hmm. Like ever since I was a little kid. I mean, it kind of, in a way, I like to say that it's when I was a little kid, I think I was still in diapers, and I taught myself how to use our VCR because I didn't want to have to like go to my parents every time I wanted to watch Star Wars. I just like grabbed the tape, put it in, hit the top loader VCR, you know, load the tape in the top and find the green arrow that hit says play, you know? and that's kind of what I started doing as a career, like playing tapes and copying tapes and whatever. But Star Wars has always been a huge part of my life. It's always been like where my imagination kind of came from. Like it really triggered my imagination as a kid. And that's definitely my favorite thing is the Star Wars Black Series right now. I've made a couple steps into the Sideshow figures, and that's a dangerous path there because those things are 10 times as expensive as as Black Series figures.
Yeah, they're beautiful, but they are really expensive.
Yeah, and they're gorgeous. And that's a thing, like some guys say, well, it's like, well, I collect 6 scale and, you know, I only have a dozen versus your, you know, 100 Marvel Legends, you know, so it's kind of the same price in a way.
That's true.
So it's like how many Lego sets equals a Sideshow figure, you know, so it is relative as long as you can kind of keep that under control. But the other main thing, like I have a ton of Marvel Legends because I love Marvel too. That's always been a big thing growing up, you know, comic books. So, I mean, when I was little, I started out, you know, Superman, Batman, Green Lantern and all those guys. But as I got older and Marvel got a little bit bigger, well, I became more aware of Marvel. And I think the X-Men kind of kicked that off like in the 90s and Deadpool at about the same time because Deadpool has always been my favorite Marvel character. And yeah, I need to shoot him more because I have a handful of Deadpool figures and I've only shot him a few times. And those are the ones that are, they're not terribly expensive and they have great articulation and you can get a lot out of them. So that's probably why I shoot those the most.
Yeah, that makes sense. You also seem to primarily shoot outdoors, a lot of cool practical effects and a lot of action scenes. Your shots are very cinematic. Can you talk about your specific style and how you kind of honed that style over time?
That's a good question. Like I generally shoot outdoors because you don't have to monkey with lighting as much. I mean, you have to worry about lighting, but in a very different way.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my early photos were, you know, it was like broad daylight and shooting. I was like, why doesn't this look good? You know, so you really have to kind of study the photos that you think are really good. Like, so the guys that were great, it's like, okay, well, why does this look good? Why does the lighting look good? Where is the sun in relation to where they're shooting? You know, all those things that don't register automatically. It's like, okay, you know, you need to shoot in shadows because middle of the day is really harsh lighting. And, you know, sunset and sunrise are great lighting, and learning how to use that in different ways is really important. And I've always been really into movies. Like, that's been a big thing for me, you know, starting with Star Wars and, like, King Kong as a little kid. Like, they're just my favorite things. Growing up on different monster movies, of course. But once I was in high school, about, like, hanging out with more friends who were a little more cinephiles, you might say, like, really into the film and art of film. And that's kind of when I had like my eyes open to what good movies are, you know, like, and that's when I learned. I remember I was talking to a buddy, one of these guys who was like really into film and movies or whatever. And it was when Boondock Saints came out and I had never even heard of the movie, but like my friend's sister had rented it and we're like, holy shit, like, this movie's awesome. Like, it's so cool and fun, whatever. And I was talking to a friend in high school, or one of my friends in school, and I was like, have you seen Boondock Saints? He's like, yeah, I saw it. And I was like, dude, that movie was so good. And he goes, no, it wasn't. And then I stopped and I thought about it for a second. I was like, you know, that wasn't really a good movie, but I sure loved it. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of when it kind of came around to me where there's a major difference between saying I like a movie and it is a movie good. So people ask, like, you know, you saw whatever movie that just came out. It's like, oh, was it good? Be like, yeah, it was great, but you're not going to like it because you don't know. You know, you can't appreciate Paul Thomas Anderson or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But no, like I really got into film like early 2000s. And then part of the reason I wasn't into photography so much is because I was so into video and movies. And so I did a lot of just kind of shooting random things with camera, kind of learning about what makes good shots. And of course, like learning about movie masters back then. And then, you know, moving to Los Angeles where that's like how people talk all the time. Like, oh, do you see this film? And like talking about shot compositions and editing and cinematography and really learning about all that stuff, learning why things look great in movies, you know, like, and really just getting more of an eye for it. So that's definitely where I think my cinematic style, if you want to call it that, comes in.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because that's kind of how I think, in a way, I guess, when I think of movies, like framing things like that. And, you know, what? How do you provide depth in a shot? And am I providing, you know, am I using rule of thirds, those sorts of things? How am I framing things? So it's kind of been ingrained over a long history of just growing up and loving movies.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think you and I have very similar backgrounds in that respect, as far as loving movies and then learning as much as we can about them. I'm sure you watched a lot of behind the scenes kind of things.
Oh, yeah.
And listening into commentaries and stuff like that. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, I can relate to that, definitely. So what is a typical shoot for you like with the action figure photography and the effects you do and stuff? There's probably a little bit of more setup than just setting a figure down and taking a picture. Can you talk about what that process is like?
Oh, for sure. When I go out, and I have definitely certain places outside that I like to go. There's a city a couple hours north of here, Duluth, and that's right on the tip of Lake Superior. And it's a city that's on like a big hill. So there's really great rocky terrain, and there's, you know, like really big open spaces. And like, if there's any shots like where it looks like I'm up in the hills somewhere, it's somewhere in Duluth, Minnesota, where my brother lives, which is great. So I can just stay with him and go shoot all day. So when I go out, I definitely have like a bag full of stuff, and then I can choose what I'm going to shoot. And sometimes I have more of an idea to begin with of exactly what I want. But setting up is much harder than I think people think about. It's not like you just set an action figure down and go, like you're saying. It's, you really got to think about the pose you want. And it's one of those like things where I'm kind of nitpicky about posing. It's like, okay, got to make sure that the anatomy of like how someone's running like works, you know? So I might like act it out myself. Like if someone's swinging a sword or lightsaber or what have you, like, does it feel like a natural pose? Cause so many times I see guys like do a running pose and it's like, well, the guy, nobody runs with their right foot forward and their right arm forward at the same time.
Oh, okay. It's that makes sense.
It's the most unnatural thing ever. Mm-hmm. But people do it all the time in their photographies. And I've seen even some of the best guys doing it. And I was like, don't do that, you know. But but I've done things like that where I'll have a pose and I won't notice until I get home and start editing. It's like, oh, man, this pose is wrong, or it's weird, or there's something. Like I have a picture I did of Jack Skellington in Zero. And, you know, Jack's kind of like has a big stride as he's walking. And it's like great backlit shot, like in the autumn, like some, you know, nice autumn colors behind him. But I'm looking at the shot, I'm like, it looks like his arm is coming right out of his crotch. Like it was the weirdest thing. I was like, I don't know if anyone will notice this, but it bugs the crap out of me. So I can't, you know, the posing isn't right.
Mm-hmm.
And so many times I have to, in order for a pose to be natural, you have to be able to like kind of see movement in it. When we move, we're not holding those positions, you know, we're moving. When you're walking, you're falling forward and just catching yourself, as it were. And in order to do that in action figure, you know, if we paused mid-step, we'd fall over.
Mm-hmm.
Same with a toy. So a lot of the times, you know, I'll have to have wires, or sometimes I'll be working on a pose and just grab a stick and prop them up so that they're not falling over, you know, so you can have a natural pose and then just take it out in Photoshop. So then you go from having the pose that you want to do, or the idea of the shot in your head, and then you line up the camera, and then it looks weird, or you don't want to move things. So then you adjust and make sure the light's where you want it to be, and you got to get the right angle of your figures. It's, you know, I put way too much work into it probably. And depending on where I am, like, people will be walking by and looking at me, or some people, mm-hmm. like, you know, will ask what you're doing sometimes. But I've actually never gotten any really like negative experiences in that regard. Like, I've never been shooting somewhere and been laying on the ground shooting and be like, what the hell are you doing? You know, it's never like that. It's like, so what's going on here? You know, most time people are cool, and I'll even like pull up my camera and show them what, you know, the preview of what I just shot, so they can say, oh, okay, I get it now. So that's been good. And then if you're using special effects, it really helps to have a tripod. I've got a mini tripod that I take with my camera bag no matter what, because if I decide, you know, even if like you have like a couple guys on wires, before you move your camera, take them out of the shot and take another picture, so it's easier to paint out the wires, you know, so you have the what's behind the wires. Or if you're doing special effects, you really need a tripod, because then, like, if you're using firecrackers, like a lot of guys do, then you've got to be shooting rapid fire. It's so hard to catch them otherwise. It's kind of, even if you're shooting 7, 6, whatever frames a second, the flash of a firecracker happens really fast. So even on those, you know, for every firecracker shot, I probably took like at least 50, if not 100 pictures trying to get one, you know?
Yeah, I've never worked with firecrackers, but the few times I have tried to do some kind of effect with something in motion, whether it's like a water drop or something like that, I've found it very frustrating because those extra elements and effects and things in motion while you're trying to shoot can be very difficult. So
absolutely.
I could see how that process adds a lot of steps for you in the actual shooting phase.
Oh, for sure. And I was just out shooting this weekend in the snow, and that provides its own like different levels of challenges, you know, finding a spot like, okay, well, you want to go shoot in the snow, you're going to be laying down in the snow.
Yeah.
So you're either going to be soaking wet when you're done and probably have hypothermia. I brought like a moving blanket with me, you know, like one of those thick blankets. And then I found a spot in this park where the sidewalk was actually somewhat clear. So I wasn't laying completely in the snow, but then still you got to make sure, like, I was putting things back in my bag. And also I'm like, wait, how much snow am I putting in my bag now? Cause I didn't, you know, dust off my figures. And I'm sure like anyone who shot like in dirt or sand, like there's a bunch of sand in your bag, your camera bag right now, because you couldn't clean your figure well enough. And it just happens.
Shooting in the elements like that can be very challenging. And like you said, most of the time you're laying in those elements right next to your toys.
Right.
So that's a whole nother level of prep that you have to think of ahead of time, and uncomfortable shooting positions and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, exactly. And that's actually when I go out and shoot outside, one of the first things I'm looking for is somewhere where I don't have to be lying on the ground. Like I'm looking for something up on a rock that I can just kind of lean on and shoot, or maybe, you know, just have somewhere comfortable to shoot. And, you know, it doesn't work out that way very much, but I've got a couple of locations I go to specifically because I don't have to lie down for my shots. And so many things will happen too. Like when I was out this weekend shooting, A, I'm lying in the freezing cold. B, I'm also trying to watch my niece who's outside with me at the same time. And then like C, like I had this like crazy muscle pain in my back. Like, I don't know if I'd strained a muscle or what, but every time I moved, there's like a pinch in my back. So I was getting even more frustrated when I couldn't get the figure to move just right. You know, it all compiles. There's so many different moving parts when you're doing that sort of thing.
Yeah, for sure. And then to know that you have to go home and jump into Photoshop and then finish and hope that you got everything right. So.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing, too. You know, someone like, it was actually a park by my sister's house. And she's like, did you get the shot? I was like, we'll see, you know.
Yeah.
I took an awful lot of them. I should have gotten something, and most of the time it works out. Most of the time I can tell if I got something. Now, I've been doing this long enough where I can tell if something's at least salvageable.
Do you end up doing a lot of post-processing? Let's talk about that process a little bit. You mentioned Photoshop earlier.
Yeah, I just about only use Photoshop. Sometimes I'll throw it into lens effects if I need like an extra light or something. Like I just did a picture of the Inferno Squad, and I have the little ID-10 droid, and for that droid, when I took the picture, the raw picture is just this droid that I had 3D printed and I painted. There's like no life to it at all. So I had to, you know, Photoshop in some lights on it, you know, because his main eye has a red light and then, you know, there's a couple lights around him. So I'll use lens effects for tiny little effects like that. Not too often, but I learned, I have a degree in graphic design from early on, right after high school. And that's where I learned Photoshop and kind of learned all the different things that Photoshop can do. And that's why I'm most comfortable in Photoshop right now.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I always shoot in RAW. Of course, you can get the most flexibility out of editing. Like RAW has saved my butt so many times. The shot I just posted is of Kylo Ren and some snowtroopers.
Mm-hmm.
In the RAW shot, like you can barely even see Kylo Ren because he's so dark. But you edit in RAW and you can, those details can actually come out. So that's definitely a lifesaver. And then I will generally, I mean, well, for that, with that last shot, for instance, I was using atmosphere aerosol, and it's one of those, you know, extra elements when you put in, it's probably not going to do exactly what you want it to or have the look you want it to. So I took a lot of shots knowing that the way that stuff sits in the air around the figures, it can look really different. Because the raw shot without atmosphere aerosol looks nothing like the final product. Because when that stuff comes in, it changes the light behind the figure because it's capturing the sun, which I had behind the figures, and everything changes. So anyway, something I learned early on using smoke bombs is that smoke will never do what you want it to do. I mean, to get a good shot with smoke, like there has to be zero breeze around you. The smoke bomb itself has to be, you know, letting the smoke out at a right pace. It needs to be pointed the right direction. Like, there's a million things that go wrong with smoke bombs. So I learned early on that to kind of paint into the frame what you want. Now, what I mean by that is, so I had a picture of Phasma and some troops around her. And when I was lighting the smoke bomb, I knew that I wasn't going to be able to get in one shot, like, exactly how I wanted the smoke. Because some, you know, Phasma's going to be covered. Or if she's not, then the smoke's not going to be in the shot the way you want it. So what I was doing was, I know that I can composite in Photoshop. So make sure that, okay, there's a little bit of smoke on the right side. Okay, now do another couple shots where the smoke's more on the left. Do a couple shots where the smoke's in the background. And then combine all those in Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
So the most Photoshop is I do that sort of thing. So with this recent shot of Kylo Ren, it's like four different shots, I think, where the smoke, I really like the background aerosol in one shot. Then I really liked it the way it was around their feet in another shot and so forth. So I just combine them to get what I want.
That's cool. And that's another area where a tripod really comes in handy.
Oh yeah, absolutely vital.
Because if you move even an inch or something, you know, everything is messed up and you gotta either spend a lot of time in Photoshop or try again.
Well, yeah, and that's what it comes down to too, is like when I am compositing, even when you're using a tripod, it's gonna move a little bit. So I gotta like zoom way in and change opacity and just make sure that those pictures are lined up perfectly. And it's a lot of fidgety work, but I was pretty happy with how it turned out.
You mentioned 3D printing, and I've noticed that lately you've been making your own custom toys or doing your own painting and stuff. Can you talk about that? Why you've been doing that, and what kind of processes you've been doing with that?
Oh gosh, it's funny because I think dabbled in just about every form of customizing you can do for toys. Like I get inspired by so much that I see. Like I want to be creative and I want to be able to make things like in every form possible. Like I don't know how to knit, but I would love to learn how to knit just so I could learn how to make things like that, just because it's another medium to work in.
Yeah.
So with toys, like seeing guys doing custom action figures, I was like, this is amazing. Like you can make anything if you kind of set your mind to it and learn how to do it. So yeah, I mean, I first started kind of messing around with paints and like learning the proper way to do black washes and, you know, just tons of research on that and trying to find tutorials on repainting faces and like, how do you paint an eyeball on a 6-inch figure? It's impossible, you know? So just dabbling and trying little things like that, and then getting into things like molding and casting, which is really fun. It's like, it's those things that you see and you're like, okay, I can't do that. But then I'm like, okay, well, someone else did it, I can do it too.
Yeah.
So I just kind of get that mindset about certain things. So molding and casting was one thing I tried early on. And then like seeing guys build dioramas, I was like, that's incredible. Like I want to build my own sets. So I started trying that, you know, and I have one that I finished that I've only used a couple times, but then I've got like two others that are in development, I guess you could say. But I like to build and create in just about every way possible. So when I see other people doing it, I just get that itch, like I really want to try it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did in high school, I took, was it one or at least two classes worth of computer aided drafting or CAD. So I kind of, that was another way. I was like, oh, here's another way to create something. So that was really fun for me to learn, like, okay, well, if I want to build a block, like what are the terms that you need to use. Okay, well, you need to draw a rectangle and extrude, you know, and just kind of learning that language.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really used that much. Like, I thought that might be a career for me, is working in computer-aided drafting. But I really didn't use it much after high school. And then lately, with the progress that 3D printing has made over the years, it's like, you know, I can really, whatever I can imagine, like in 3D, I can make it in a 3D program and have it printed, you know, and work with it like that. So I just recently, I dabbled with it a couple years ago, like trying to make, I made a replacement for my NECA Leonardo, the comic book one, like the original one, because the sword broke. And I was like, I bet I can 3D make another one. So I tried, and it was kind of a crappy attempt, but that was kind of where it started. And then just recently I found another 3D program for free, and because I really got the bug to make that ID-10 droid from Battlefront 2. So I really kind of dug in deep on this program and figured out how to make the droid and try to make it as faithful as I could to the original one from reference photos and video and such. But it's actually, I mean, it's really fun for me to design and make things, and especially like relearning CAD was like, all the language was there, I just hadn't really used it. And that was the same thing with photography. I had to relearn things like ISO and aperture and f-stop, like what all these things do. And around the time when I was getting serious and using an SLR for toy photography, I was dating a girl who was a wedding photographer. So I was always bugging her. It's like, okay, so what aperture do I want to use here? And she's like, for God's sake, like, why don't you know this? But but I learned, you know, it's just a thing that you practice and you experiment. You try different things and okay, well, that's why I get a narrow field of focus. This is why I look so sharp. You know, change this setting. This is why I can see everything in focus. It's just learning and trying and doing.
let's switch gears a little bit. You've been to a couple toy photo safaris, the meetups that we do in person with other photographers. That's where I met you in the Seattle one in 2016.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that. Were you at the park, or did I meet you at Shelley's house?
So I was at the park. I remember my plane got in like right as you guys were like finishing up at the park.
Oh, okay.
And my Uber driver dropped me off at the other end of the park.
Oh, no.
And I had like my suitcase and all my gear.
Oh, man.
and my phone had fallen out of my pocket and broken when I was getting out of the Uber.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like super stressed and the battery was dying and my phone was broken. So I'm walking around this park looking for you guys and I finally find you. And I'm like, are you guys with Toy Photographers? And I got there and you guys are like, yeah, we're just finishing up right now. We're done.
Oh, man. Yeah, because there was a group of people who left early on. And then I remember sitting, it was me and Bear Trap and Intangible Dandy were sitting kind of in a gazebo, kind of hanging out like a lot longer than like other people were hanging out. I think Nick and Cheyenne were there too, Wee Man and Lady Nightingale, I think she goes by now.
Yep.
But and then that's where I met Greater Beast, Eva.
Yeah, she was there too.
Or is it Eva? I'm not really sure. But so you must have showed up like right around the time while we were all getting.
Yeah, I think I was there for about 5 minutes and then we all got in cars and went back to Shelley's. And you, I think I remember I got there and you had spotted like a spider web or something. And you're like, oh, guys, hold on one sec. I got to take this picture. And you set up
a
really cool Spider-Man shot right there.
There was a really cool spider web. And I was like, okay, I don't have my Spider-Man figure, but someone here has a Spider-Man figure. So Dave or Bear Trap pulled his out and gave me the assist. He actually kind of held the wire so Spider-Man could look like he was on the web. That shot turned out pretty good, actually.
Yeah, that was one of those moments where I got there and I was like, wow, I am out of my league with you guys.
Well, that's a fun thing, too. I mean, like, we all learn so much from each other and how people shoot, and it just kind of gives you a different perspective. It's just all learning.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about that safari experience. Was the Seattle one the first one you had been to?
Yep.
Yeah, so what made you want to go to that, and what was that experience like?
Well, the previous year, I think it was like Crash who I was following, Crash Override. And I don't know if I was following Kiwi at that time or Wiki Toy Box, but they were posting about the one in Nevada or Vegas when they did the Toy Safari. And I remember thinking, like, that's a great idea. Like, get a bunch of toy photographers together, go to a cool location, just like shoot all weekend. Like, that was, and I wasn't really confident in myself at that time, or I hadn't really been talking to many people on Instagram at that time. So I felt a little weird. A little uncomfortable with it. But then I was like, you know, if they do this again, I got to get into it. And then over the next year, just kind of, you know, just chatting with people back and forth a little bit more, feeling more comfortable in the community as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
That definitely gave me the tenacity or whatever to go out to Seattle and meet with a bunch of strangers in the woods, you know, essentially. Because, you know, I was like talking to my coworker. He's like, okay, so you're going to go out with a bunch of people that you met online. And you have no idea what's going to happen. I was like, yeah, pretty much. Like, whatever. I'll just go meet them in the
totally
woods.
Safe. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's the way it went down. And no, I loved it. I mean, I'm not an extrovert. And then, you know, like most of us photographers, artists probably have our social awkwardness. I mean, that just kind of is, it seems like that stereotype is somewhat true for, you know, for folks like us. And so I'm not outgoing. I'm not like, oh, I want to go meet a bunch of people. You know, it's more like, I kind of forced myself to do it in a way because I was like, I don't know anyone out there, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, I'm trying to think if there was anyone who I kind of clung to, but there really wasn't. There's people, you know, I know their work, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm comfortable enough, like, once I start talking to people, so it was fine. And like I said, I kind of forced myself into that social situation so I can, you know, at least appear like I'm comfortable, I guess. But no, it was really great, especially like being at Shelley's and just kind of talking to people and be like, oh, crap, you're so-and-so. Yeah, I follow you, you know. And actually what I was doing, I don't know if you saw me doing this, but like when I was talking to people or even introducing myself or whatever, I'd be like, okay, what's your Instagram handle? You know,
mm-hmm.
Now I was pulling up their Instagram page because that's how I know them. You know, that's their face to me. It was their Instagram page.
Yeah.
So I was actually pulling it up on some people and like, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, I know your profile, you know. So, and then that was really just fun matching that. All the photos that you've seen and the Instagram account and maybe even their, you know, their profile picture and now attaching that to a real human being, you know, and, it was great. I mean, I really loved the social aspect of it. I mean, cause we're all on the same page, you know, it's like most of us, I'm guessing are like with our families, talking to our families about what we do or being out in public and doing what we do. I mean, there's a certain amount of, self-consciousness to that. I mean, like where, you know, maybe my family doesn't understand it. They think I'm weird, but I really like doing this. Or, you know, like if you're out in public, people are looking at me weird. You know, I'm laying down on the ground in the middle of a city, like trying to take a picture of a action figure or Lego or what have you. But it was really just, it was like a support group, you know, where where you go and everyone's been through the same thing and we all had similar stories. And it, I don't know, it just felt like it was, it sounds cheesy, but it was kind of an instant family, you know, instant bond.
Yeah, absolutely. I see that. And I experienced that as well. And I'm not a very extroverted person either, which explains why I would do a podcast, I guess. So I had the same experience with, you know, having to build up the courage to go and meet people in person. But once you're there, everybody clicks and start swapping toys and swapping war stories about, you know, shoots that went bad or whatever. And it's a lot of fun. You went to the San Francisco one last year, is that right?
Yep.
How was that experience compared to the Seattle one, especially since you had been to one before? What was it like going to another one?
Well, it was great. It was cool to be in a new city. Like, I've never hung out in San Francisco. I think I've flown through there. But it was awesome because now you know people. You know a handful of people. Like, so it's great to see the people that you spent time with before and shoot with them. And those are the same people you've now been building a relationship with online more. It's like, okay, we hung out. Now, like, for the next year, we're talking more online. And now we're all together again. So that was great. And meeting new people and then being able to kind of, you know, usher people, new people into that, like Toy at Heart, Austin. I met him on Instagram and he lived in my city. So that's why we started talking. So, cause we live in the same city, mm-hmm. in Minneapolis here. And so he and I had gone to shoot together. Or we got together with Haunted Hillbilly and then FOV. What's his Instagram handle? Is it FOV Models? He shots from Sabin as well. He's really into like war toys and he has some great tank pictures and 1/6 scale soldiers. But anyway, Max is a pretty local guy who I've shot with here. Anyway, so with Austin, I had seen him just downtown where we work because I was swapping toys with him or something. I had picked up something for him and he was, you know, asking me what I got coming up. And I was like, yeah, actually, I'm going out to San Francisco to this toy photo safari. And he kind of like had an inquisitive look like, what's that? You know, so I told him a little bit about it. I was like, yeah, last year in Seattle was great meeting people and all shooting together for a whole weekend. And I mean, this is maybe like a month or two away at this point. And I was like, well, I'll tell him about it. Anyway, it's like, if you want, I'll send you the info and you can come out. And he's like, oh, cool, man. That'd be great. And I didn't know if he was just like being like polite, you know, like yeah. when someone says something like that. But he signed up like the next day and I was like, oh, cool. Austin's going to come out, too. So that was really fun just to kind of introduce someone new, you know, that's a great toy photographer to the whole scene and meeting new people. And it was fun.
Let's talk a little bit about opportunities, because you've had a couple cool ones. You were featured by Hasbro for the New York Toy Fair with some Star Wars shots. Can you talk about how that came about and what exactly that was?
Yeah, for sure. That actually started, I think the year before that. That was when Hasbro actually did the campaign. It was like Hasbro Toy Picks. And that's when Johnny was kind of the spokesperson for that, or Sergeant Bananas. They used his pictures, or he shot for them, to kind of kick off this campaign. I think it was right before Force Awakens or right around that time where they, you know, where Hasbro said, take pictures of your toys and tag them with Hasbro Toy Picks or Hasbro Toy Pick. I can't remember if it was singular or plural. Anyway, so I shot a ton of stuff. Like I really wanted to be involved because they were going to, I think, potentially pick people to use their photos. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember how many submissions you could have or whatever. So I started shooting like a ton of stuff and there were some things I really loved and I was like, okay, these shots are, you know, worthy or whatever. They contacted me and I think 10 or 12 other guys. And that's when they actually said, okay, now we like this picture. We're going to use this picture of yours. And I didn't even know who else they contacted, but I knew that they wanted some more shots from me. Yeah, there was like a dozen of us who got selected to have our photos used at San Diego Comic-Con on their display.
That's awesome.
And most of us only had one. There was a couple of us who had two or three shots, but that was the first big thing. Like that was really exciting just because, you know, because I could show the people who, you know, might not get what I do or whatever, be like, hey, check this out. You know, the biggest toy company in the world, you know, is using my photography and their displays and everyone seeing it at the biggest Comic-Con in the world. So that was really exciting.
Yeah.
That was great. And you know, it was like the first kind of major validation, you know, like this is actually, you know, an art form or, you know, this has been recognized as being something that's acceptable, maybe. I don't know.
Or it's like a legitimate thing, you know?
Yeah, this isn't just some weird thing I do. This is legitimate. And hopefully, you know, and more than just myself and some other weirdos think it's cool. But I think they use that same display again at Toy Fair. And then I was contacted again early last year to be part of the 40th anniversary shoot.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the Hasbro toy pick thing again, where they contacted me and asked me for like 6 to 8 pictures recreating things from A New Hope. And that was really cool, because then it was all but 1 or 2 of my shots that were used. So the display, that was a handful of us toy photographers. I had a bunch of stuff on there. And then that display was used at, I think Star Wars Celebration was the first time they had it up. And it was just so cool being able to be at Star Wars Celebration, which I've gone to the last few now in the States, and just talking to the guys at Hasbro and be like, oh, these are my pictures. Like,
yeah.
So feeling like I actually had a reason, or feeling like I was kind of somebody for them to talk to, or, that was somewhat interesting, So that was great. That was really great. And there was a panel at Star Wars Celebration, a Hasbro panel, and they talked about the Hasbro toy pick hashtag, and they actually recognized myself and I don't know who else in the crowd. So that was really cool. And that's that was actually, I met Manny Bothans, I think is his name. No, he came up to me after the thing. He's like, oh, your father's figures. I was like, yeah, cool, man. What's up? So those sorts of things are just really cool to be able to connect with people, that you know online, then you meet them in person. It's just really cool.
Another opportunity you've had is that you were just featured in the latest issue of Exclude Design Communities online magazine, I guess it is. Yeah. Can you talk about how that opportunity came up and what that was like?
Yeah, they contacted me, I think, around the time issue 5 had come out, and they said that they wanted to do an actual article of mine and use some pictures, because they had actually done, they wanted me to do like a little behind the scenes article of one of my shots. So I had done that. I think it was actually for an issue of theirs. I think it was for just their blog. So I guess there's a difference between an online magazine and just a blog. So I had a little thing there, and that was fun to do, kind of break down one of my shots that I had actually, some special effects. It was, there was a couple clone troopers fighting some battle droids, and one of them was getting shot through the head. But I broke down that and all the different elements that go into it, like both practical and Photoshop elements that come together to make a shot. So that was where my relationship with them started. And then for issue 6, he said that he wanted to get me in, and he had been trying to find the right time to get me in as one of the actual featured artists in their magazine. So yeah, that was I think he wanted like 10 shots, and he wanted them pretty quick. So I was like really stressing out about how, if these are gonna be featured in a magazine, it's like I really want them to be the best shots I could possibly do.
Yeah.
And then I worked really hard on the ones and got them done at a certain point, and luckily, he gave us a little time extension, because I think a few of us needed it. What was really hard about it was that, I had at least 8 or 10 shots, and all of them, except for maybe 1 or 2 or things, are like, this is some of the best stuff I've ever done. And just having to sit on that for a month and a half, not being able to share them, that was kind of tough, because I don't know if it works for you the way it works for me, where, I want to have a couple shots to share a week at least.
Yeah.
And you want to share like some great shots, but then like I had a drought of posts on Instagram because I had been working so hard on the Exclude stuff. So eventually when they got the go ahead, I could share, some images that were some of my favorite ones I had done at that point. So that was great when that finally did come out, just as a relief, just to be able to share the things I wanted to share finally. But it was good.
You've written for toy photographers a couple times too.
Yeah, originally it was, I think the first thing I did for them was just a recap of the Seattle trip and just kind of getting my perspective on everything, because with the toy photography group, it started as a Lego group, and like primarily Lego. So I was, not that everyone wasn't welcome at the safari, but the core of it is, Lego photographers, and it was even sponsored by Lego, which is really cool. So getting a perspective of someone who wasn't part of that, and someone like myself who shoots more of a wide range of things, and it was kind of more of a, getting the message out that it's for everyone. Like, if you take pictures of toys, you're gonna have a good time, essentially. And even kind of learning from each other who do shoot different styles, like that was part of what I wrote about. And then I can't remember what else I did. I think I did another kind of like get to know you sort of thing as a photographer, where I talked about my history and how I got into it and all that that fun stuff. I like to contribute to that because, like I said, I think that, I don't know if I share a perspective like with a lot of the action figure photographers, but I'm definitely more in that direction. So I think I have a different take than I guess than some of their photographers might have. But when it comes down to it, it's all so similar.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the point that I've driven home like in the few different times I have written for them, is like, we're all toy photographers, whether, some guys like to do explosion, blood and guts, and some people like to do beautiful Lego shots. It's its heart is all comes from the same place. You know, we want to tell stories with our pictures, and we want to use toys to do it. And you know, I try to see it from all the different perspectives. The basic thing for people starting out is to, you know, not be frustrated with not being able to do exactly what you want to do, or you know, have your pictures look as great as you want them to look. I mean, it's a long process. It's a long learning process. Some of them, you know, a lot of us have photography backgrounds, you know, and I had a background in Photoshop and in so many different things that helped me, you know, that I've kind of accumulated and come together in everything that I do. You know, I mean, like my camera that I have is a hand-me-down from my dad and my brother who like to take pictures, you know, so it's like, so I got lucky in that way. So, I mean, just to keep at it and don't worry about, you know, having a million followers right away. That's something that, and just kind of just appreciate where you are with it and learn and study. It's a process. It's not something you just jump into, and you definitely ask questions. I mean, like I'm open. I answer people's questions as much as I can when it's, you know, actually something besides how do you do that? You know, like what kind of settings did you use, or, you know, that sort of thing. Did you use, I don't know, special effects here? Is that practical? Is that Photoshop? You know, that sort of thing. But there's so many different aspects to learn. I mean, the simplest things for people, I think, is outdoor, because then you don't have to worry about lighting as much and things look more natural and nice. And you go from there. The other big thing is, I know a lot of people aren't into toy pops as much, but starting out, that is incredibly valuable. Or it was for me anyway. Figuring out how the toy pop sessions work. I mean, because they do them twice a day, right?
Yeah, and you're talking about on Instagram, right?
On Instagram, you follow the Instagram account Toy Pops 2, I think it's called. But they have sessions every day where you go and use whatever hashtag they assign for that session, and you post whatever picture you have, use that hashtag, and then go through and like everyone else's pictures. It's just a way to get exposure, and that's how it kind of started as a community for me. It was just kind of seeing the same people every day and saying, holy crap, this guy's stuff is awesome. You know, like you find new people to follow, and then that's going to happen for you too. When you start doing it, people are going to see your work and recognize you. And like, even if you don't think you're good at first, people are at least going to see you as someone who continually contributes to the community and liking people's pictures and commenting on people's pictures. Like that stuff gets noticed, you know? I mean, it's hard to respond all the time to everyone who says, you know, great shot, but you still see it. And just kind of being involved like in little ways, and you build up, take it slow, and make sure you're enjoying yourself, first of all. I mean, if you get stressed and if you're thinking like, well, I'm not as good as this person or whatever, that's, you're not going to enjoy it. And that's the good and bad part about social media. Is the good part of social media is you can you form an awesome community, you can be social. But the down part too is, like, you know, psychologists see social media as a bad thing because you're always comparing yourself to someone else, or someone else's life is better than mine, or it looks better than mine, and it makes you feel worse about who you are. But you know, I choose to be on the other part of it, where I just want to kind of do my thing and put it out there. And I think it's awesome that people like it, and I'm very grateful for, you know, the followers that I have and the people that I talk to and everyone who's been super cool with me. It's been great.
Where can people find your work online? What's your Instagram handle? Do you have a website, etc.?
Yeah, Father's Figures, all one word, possessive and plural. Father's Figures on Instagram, same thing on Twitter, and on Facebook too, which I've started recently, which is really slow going over there. So more Facebook followers would be great, or more interaction there anyway. But I do have a website. I do have fathersfigures.com. I don't have anything set up yet to buy prints online, which I do need to set up something. I've been going to conventions, kind of local conventions, and selling prints, and that's been great too. And if anyone wants prints of mine, I can definitely print them out and send them to you. I've got a whole box full of shipping tubes, or I can do that too.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on and talking to me. It's been a really cool conversation.
Yeah, dude. I think I'm actually going to go take some pictures of toys right now.
Thank you so much for listening. You can find new episodes of this podcast and daily articles on creativity and toy photography on our website, toyphotographers.com. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. We also ask that you please leave us a 5-star review. That'll help spread the word about the show and help us get noticed. You can find us on Facebook at Toy Photographers and on Instagram at @ToyPhotographers_. Music for this week's episode is by Blue Dot Sessions, Lee Rosevere, and Poddington Bear, courtesy of freemusicarchive.org. I'm James Garcia. You can find my work every single week at toyphotographers.com, as well as on Twitter at TheRealJames, real spelled R-E-E-L, on Instagram at TheRealJames23, and on my website, TheRealJames.com. Thanks so much for listening. I'll see you guys next week.